For anyone reading this exchange with Peter DeVries and myself, I want to outline one of the principles of trauma and traumatic, I guess, coping mechanism or engagement that's in play here. So when there is a trauma, by definition, it is a ball of energy. It is a mass of energy that overwhelms the ego's ability to digest it. And because of that overwhelm or that flooding, which basically means that there's no perspective, the ego is like a telescope that zeroes in on a very particular portion of reality at a given moment. And the consciousness is capable of digesting the amount of energy that shows up in the field of the telescope as a general rule. And normally objects are viewed with a sense of perspective where you see, an object next to something else, next to something else. And so you have a sense of perspective, which gives a sense of time, because you see things moving as the telescope moves around from this object to that object. When a traumatic event happens, it floods the telescope. It's like putting a large red tarp right in front of the telescope, and when the telescope moves to the left, it sees the red tarp, and to the left, and the right, everywhere you look, it's this red tarp. Now, because there's no distinction between red and red, between tarp and tarp, you lose sense of time, which then further floods the ego because you lose perspective. And this is known as trauma. Now, when those masses come up repeatedly and don't get dealt with, resolved, and integrated at the time, the way we cope with them is we block them out. We dissociate that point in time. We just tune out. We leave our body. We blank. And in doing so, we lose touch with that part of ourselves. And the trauma remains in place. Then as time goes on, we have triggers that direct the consciousness back to that area of unresolved trauma. But that area of unresolved trauma remains bigger than the ego. So every time we turn our telescope on that tarp, it's flooded with red again. And there's the dread and the fear of losing ourselves and the feeling of overwhelm, etc. So it re-traumatizes us as we turn in that direction. And so we start trying to control our attention by controlling the outer reality to avoid directing the telescope at that red tarp until such time as we have the skill and support to go into that red telescope and navigate it with an outside witness that can mirror the terrain. And so the trick is to understand that until that occurs, when we encounter a trigger point, and a trigger point is a neuronally linked associative symbol that, because it's correlated with the traumatic event, let's say you had you were raped in New Mown Hay. Well, if the rape doesn't get integrated and sorted out, then when your partner invites you into some New Mown Hay, you may be confused because you like the partner invite and you like the actual sensation, but you're terrified of getting re redirected, having your consciousness redirected towards a mass of energy that is or feels life-threatening, and that has not been reintegrated back into the system. Now, one of the reasons chronic fatigue often follows is that having been reintegrated, or not having been left there as a large mass of energy with a large defense structure around it, we've got to spend energy both on the traumatic event, on the feelings and responses of trauma, and on suppressing them and on denying them and dissociating from them. So it's quite a lot. It's about, you know, it's significant amount of energy. We also, as a result of sustaining that as a blind spot, meaning the areas that we cannot integrate back into our sensory processing system of reality are areas that we cannot see clearly. Because when we get near that terrain, we hit our defense and we go into divergence, avoidance, etc., in a variety of ways, so as not to be re-traumatized. And then that whole direction, it's like if the trauma is off to the left, when we start moving our eyes to the left, the defense kicks up and sends us off to the right again, which is great for managing the trauma. It's consuming energy, but it still copes with that. But what it doesn't help us do is see clearly what's going on off to the left. And as a result, we make poor decisions in that domain. And that's just what, you know, what happens. We make poor decisions in that domain, and that can further lead to anxiety, because now we associate that whole terrain with mistakes. We also then have to spend energy cleaning up the mess from the poor decisions we made, which we made because we can't look in that direction. And so, so this is kind of what's going on here with Peter and myself. So there are triggers around conflict, one. So there's conflict because of the dynamic of I want to speak, and Peter has a resistance in place that results in making it a conflict in order to be heard. And the more that he resists, the more it becomes a conflict to keep talking. So, and the more it's a conflict, the more that directs me towards one whole section of traumatic events. Now, the reptilian brain, the fight, flight, freeze brain, is intended to react to and manage trauma. So when the ego can't deal with something alone, the reptilian brain steps in. And so we see in the last email to Peter, anxiety building as the ego is saying, I can't keep being re-triggered with a sustained series of willful ignorance. You know, like, I'm not going to listen to you, I'm still not going to listen to you, and I'm still not going to listen to you. Now, this is a traumatic trigger, as it is in, you know, in many abusive patterns, because this is normally correlated with abuse, because if abusers listened to the facial expression of their victims and said, gee, I don't want to cause my victim terror, and I see terror on their face, they would stop the behavior and would not be abusers. An abuser is someone who, when they get a message that someone's terrified, they do it again. And when they see it on the face, they do it again. And when the person says stop, they do it again. And when the person says, please stop, you're hurting me, they do it again. And so Peter activates that pattern of behavior when he consistently doesn't follow up, doesn't prioritize something that's very important to me that I'm communicating over and over again in a sustained pattern of willful ignorance, of a will, I'm not going to attune to you. Now, Peter also has an energy, most likely hereditary from his father, of a stern, violent, kind of German kind of feel. And that energy is capable of incredible violence. Now, I'm not saying that Peter is a violent person. I've no idea how often he smashes things, hurts people, and under what circumstances. But that potential is there in the energy field. And there's also very strong cutting energy. And there's a healthy side to this, and there's an unhealthy side to this. But that is pronounced in Peter's energy. I sense it immediately. And the question is that going to cut me? Well, the answer is in the level of tenderness, the level of attunement, the level of responsiveness, and the level of empathy. Well, Peter is very low in those areas, or we wouldn't be having this conversation. But he's also willfully and sustainably low in these areas, because, well, who knows why? Most likely, he has a traumatic event around his own tenderness. Because you cannot do to another what has not been done to you first and then internalized. And everyone has a feminine side. That's the part that I'm trying to navigate with here. And everyone has a masculine side. And my feminine side is trying to coach and be heard with Peter's masculine side. Well, if he can't hear my feminine side, he can't hear your feminine side, and he can't hear his own feminine side. He can't respond within the template he's been given to this particular domain. And that is a liability. Because when you have someone with a strong, sharp, masculine energy with the potential to violate, to assert, and without the willingness to attune, that is the very environment that terrifies most abused children. So that's what I wanted, in part, to talk with him about. And to give a human face to. But, see, here's the thing. I have an incredibly generous part of me that cares about strangers. That's the part that's willing to brave all this to encounter Peter. And that part is not particularly honored. Now, if it was honored, A, Peter would have noticed it in me when we spent hours together, and he would have honored it and said, I see you have this part. Nice to meet that part. I welcome that part. That's how you honor a part that is present in the field. You say, hello. Nice to see you. I see you. I care about you. If you have anything to say, I want to hear it. Well, he didn't do that. Secondly, he didn't have an outtake form. Nor did he have an outtake questionnaire. Nor did he have an outtake email of, Dane, I want to know what worked and what didn't work for you around this and why you're stopping our work. He didn't have that form. And so again, he doesn't see and respect that part of me. Now, when I realize that a woman has been sexually abused who would not have been sexually abused if, rather than telling me to move on, as a trauma therapist, Peter had said, Dane, this type of thing usually happens again repeatedly, one, and two, that means there will be more victims, and three, I think it's our ethical responsibility, if we want to live in a world of healthy human beings, to see that a school teaching sexuality and teaching sustainable relationships does not continue to hurt its patients. Would you like any help with that? Do you know what to do? Anything like that. Then I would have said, yes, I would like help with that. That's very important to me. I do understand that, and I'm overwhelmed. I'm completely overwhelmed from multiple betrayals. I would very much like some help with that. And the ethical thing to do is to say, well, you know, I can write a letter. We can go to the police. I will serve as, you know, if you want to take them to court, I will serve as a witness to what I've known about. And here's a book that should be read. Now, let's back up just a moment here. If anyone is anywhere near doing mental emotional healing in this culture and in this time frame, they need to understand sexual abuse, the ethics around sexual abuse, and at least the basic literature around sexual abuse enough to point people in the right direction. Now, why? Well, 20% of our population has participated in sexual abuse. So if Peter DeVries invites people in under the trauma umbrella, and 20% of them are going to include sexual abuse in that trauma, consciously or unconsciously, and he does not know what he's doing there. He's doing a disservice to those people because he's labeling what he's doing healing, which means he's confusing the people he doesn't know how to help. Secondly, if he doesn't know how to help, it's his ethical responsibility to pass people on to someone who does know how to help. Now, when you know that one in four of your clients is going to come in needing help and not knowing how to get that help. Now, when you say, well, what is it? How do you know that? Well, okay. So if you do a survey of Americans, just take 100 Americans and say, how many of you know what to do and how to go about it if your therapist sexually abuses you? See a show of hands. How many of you know what the difference between sexual abuse is and isn't? Who has a definition? Show of hands. How many of you understand that if you don't do anything, you're setting things up for the next victim? Show of hands. How many of you feel ashamed of going to the police in a situation like this? See a show of hands. How many of you who have been sexually abused are so overwhelmed and confused that you didn't report it to the police? See a show of hands. Now, if you will do that, you will find there's about 1 in 100 that can answer those questions in a way that's best for the growth of the culture, meaning that 99% of them are going to make the wrong decision for themselves and the culture. They're going to make a poor ethical decision that leads to an intergenerational perpetuation of the problem, which means that in order for that one person to go to, let's say, 30 people out of 100 to 100 out of 100. They need an education and they need support. Well, that's why you go to a professional dealing with trauma. You want education and you want support. For a trauma therapist to learn that a client has been sexually abused by an entire organization and school of unlicensed therapists teaching love, intimacy, and healthy sexuality under the influence of psychedelics, and to make the absurd bet that I am the one in the hundred that knows exactly what to do and how to go about it without being asked is a losing bet. Because if Peter makes that bet 100 times, he will lose the bet a majority of the time. Only it's not just him losing. It's his patients who are losing. And it's the community who's losing. Because they thought they were going to a trained therapist who knew what they were doing. And instead, they got Peter DeVries, who didn't know what he was doing, who didn't know what he was doing, and who was committed to a sustained blockade on communication that would ensure hostility towards the people who could show him what he didn't know, or what he knew but didn't want to be bothered to do. So this is a heartbreaking state of affairs, because I do not think Peter DeVries is particularly unusual. This is not a personal complaint, as in, isn't Peter DeVries the worst therapist you ever found? No. This is about average. And it is the very fact that we consistently confuse our abuse survivors into thinking that profoundly ineffective protocols that leave them traumatized and this and this is actually what healing is, that demotivates people to seek more healing, that gives the whole field a bad reputation, which hurts Peter as much as anyone else, which reduces trust, damages our culture, and leads to confusion. Because if someone says, well, what did your healer say? Well, they said, well, just move on. That's the blind spot in the culture. That's the lack of intelligence within the culture. You don't need to go to a professional to learn to be stupid. You need to go to a professional in a traumatically and emotionally illiterate culture to learn to be intelligent. And so this is the issue. Now, when Peter refuses to ask what my trigger points are, when he persists in ignoring my volunteering, that in the form of direct requests, I need to know when this ends, etc., he escalates the trauma, he demands that I move from the transcendent areas of generosity and caring about his patients, etc., into the human areas, which then become filled with fear because there's a clarity that I'm not dealing with someone who can respect me. Then that downgrades into the increased anxiety, which goes into a fight flight. So in this case, we have freezing coming up to the event, like anxiety, I don't want to breathe, anxiety, I don't want to breathe. I get tired of that and tired of the fact that I'm in freeze because a therapist doesn't know what they're doing. So then I go into attack, fuck you, da 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 da, and da, you know, how dare you, and you know, what a crappy therapist you are. So that's attack, fight. And then I go into flight, I don't want anything to do with you until da 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 da. So Peter successfully violates the coaching on how to avoid the reptilian brain so that he can deal with a rational, transcendent adult, and instead insists on evoking the part in me that is hardest for him to deal with. Meaning, once he is the trigger, because he refuses to differentiate himself from triggering behavior, once he is the trigger, he is now dealing with a part of the brain that cannot sort out the trauma and that cannot teach him effectively, which is in a certain sense part of the defense. It's one of the games that traditionally men and women play with each other in couples. The man will infuriate the woman, ignoring, grunting, silence, blah, 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 until such a point that she has rage at the point of incoherence, because that's part of the trauma, being silently muffled, which is a big trauma for every woman, because there are aspects of the feminine in our culture that are traumatically and systematically muffled, where the feminine is suppressed and denied from birth. Now, we've gotten as far as a culture of saying, okay, women are as good as men, okay, fine, we'll at least pretend, whatever. But feminine energy is not as good as men. So if you want to be president, you better be more masculine than any man. If you want to be treated with respect and get equal pay, you must be more sociopathic than the average man, not less, because you are only valued for your masculine traits. Got it? Okay, get on with it. Now, this is an enraging message. So it's when you have been traumatized and violated in that way since birth, in a culture that never apologizes for this bullshit, but just does it again and traumatizes you and shames you for speaking up about it, well, then that's an easy trigger to work. So a woman has something to say that might make the man uncomfortable, the husband, etc. So he just pokes away at those trigger buttons until she explodes in rage and then shames her for exploding in rage so that he doesn't have to listen to what she has to say and says, God, these irrational women, who can understand them? Well, you could if you sat down and listened before you triggered an incoherent rage. And you say, oh, okay, these clients, so demanding, you know, these ridiculous, you know, people, whatever, blah, blah, blah. So when someone doesn't want to hear the underlying message, they will systematically, consciously or unconsciously, trigger the person into the incoherent state so that they can then, as their last defense, say, well, how can I possibly listen to you because you are incoherent or you're rude? You know, it's like I'm going to trigger you into a state of fight, flight, and freeze by systematically ignoring all your cues, this, that, the other, not asking, not giving you space to tell me, blah, 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 blah. And then I'm going to be outraged that you're rude to me. I'm going to be incredibly rude to you by violating this terrain and not bothering to learn about it. And then I'm going to be outraged that you do anything, quote, inappropriate to me. And so then you've got the stalemate dynamic, which shuts everything down. And typically, this is where things come to rest in our culture. And I'm sick of it. So we're trying to see where can it go other than just coming to rest in a state of stalemate where, you know, Peter DeVries doesn't know what he doesn't know and has successfully pushed enough buttons to push me away so he doesn't have to hear it. And so he can then say, oh, well, you know, Dane didn't want to talk to me. Well, I was just a normal human being, even though I'm systematically ignoring this trigger point, which is, you see, it's easy for a therapist to do this because the therapist just sits there blank-faced and has nothing on the line and gets paid. You drive to his house. You pay him. You unveil all your most vulnerable feelings, and he just sits there and grunts and says, interesting. He's got nothing invested. You've exposed the most triggering terrain of your life and asked for help. And there is a shame associated with not receiving that help. There is a shame associating with not seeing emotion on the person's face that you've done that with. It's a it's a message of disowning. Meaning when you're in agony and you're sitting there with some stranger in a clipboard or whatever and they're, you know, not registering that you matter to them at all. The message is, you don't belong. You're not part of my tribe. If you were my son, I'd be showing all kinds of concern. But you're not my son. You're just the one who gave me $175 an hour. If you were my wife, I'd be all worried about this and that and the other, and you would matter. If you were a good friend. But you are none of that. You do not belong to my circle, which my face registers by its impassivity and my body registers by not doing a goddamn thing to protect you or the next person who isn't my family either. It's a message of disowning. Then as soon as Peter learns that I want to talk to him, not just schedule another session, it's another message of disowning. Meaning you're not coming to me with money, you're not that important. So here's another message of disowning. Well, the very nature of trauma in a relationship dynamic with a therapist is a message of disowning. When a therapist abuses you, so here's Peter, one therapist, being hired to fix another therapist's shit. Because that therapist didn't care enough about the issue either. Otherwise, they wouldn't have sexually abused me under the influence of psychedelics. So, Peter's, you know, also saying to that other Peter, Peter Sandhill, you don't matter. Your career doesn't matter. I'm not going to help you learn what's obviously wrong, because you don't matter. I'm not going to take action about that. Now that has impact. Because when one therapist excludes you to protect their career, and another therapist doesn't include you because they don't care all that much, the message is one of you don't belong anywhere. Because you can raise a hand in American culture and say, hey! Hey! Anyone! I've just been abused. I don't have a good friend. I have an abusive family. Anyone! Hello! You can stand on a street corner and bellow out in this fucked up country. What's going on? In a way that anyone with a modicum of intelligence would say, that person needs some help. And not get any help. And you can have people give you the finger. And you can have people walk on by hurriedly and look at you as if you're the scary one for asking to clean up the mess. That's how sick we are. Now, when you go to someone like Peter, who's supposed to be a resource, and this is the best he's got, that reinforces the trauma because it's not good enough. If Peter DeVries is the answer to childhood sexual abuse, we're not going to have healthy adults. So it escalates the issue. Now, if we go to Peter's teachers and colleagues and therapists, and they don't want to touch it, you see, that's what's probable in this culture. They don't want to touch it. Meaning they don't understand their ethics. They don't care enough about Peter, about me, or the culture to do anything about this. That is not a reassuring message. That is a prayer to the goddess of passivity and indifference. It is a prayer to the god of betrayal and stupidity. It is not a prayer to the deities of love and connectedness. When people pray with their time, their money, their words, and their attention to passivity, to betrayal, to indifference, evil, pain, and suffering is not far behind, which is why it's not ethical behavior. So this is clear mathematics, clear biology. And the question you've got to ask yourself is, if we're in a culture where the client has to educate the professional to this degree and shout this loud, for the professional to still fail, how safe is this culture? How safe are these professionals? My answer is not very safe. This puts all the burden back on me, which I've had since I was 2 years old, when I started realizing that my parents were crazy, that my school was in cahoots with my parents, that my government was in cahoots with my parents, and that everyone I do business with in this culture is in cahoots with the silent conspiracy not to talk anything about it and say, hey, how you doing? How everything's good? Everything's good? A mild undertone of anxiety that you might actually tell the truth this time. Oh, it's fine. Oh, good, good. We'll all carry on with the conspiracy of silence. So this is the core of this charge. And the only thing unusual is I'm breaking taboo after taboo after taboo to speak about it, which will typically result in escalating hostility. Because in our cult, we are more interested in shutting up the whistleblowers, whether it's Edward Snowden, Julian Assange, Chelsea Manning, or anyone else. Let's just shut the voices up that demand that we think and respond as human beings. So thank you for listening, and I hope this supports you in deciding if and how to work with a therapist, and hopefully it gives you some filters to understand, some of the politics, etc., in play.